Ryan, are you drinking only premium, ethically sourced, freshly roasted coffee?
What? Like it's hard? I can't do a woman's voice. We know this. We've established this before.
No, it's not hard at all. It's as easy as switching to Sparkplug Coffee. Sparkplug starts with premium Arabica fair trade coffee beans. They offer a variety of blends and roasts to choose from, but the best part is that Sparkplug delivers this excellent coffee to you in Canada or the US within 1 week of custom roasting it so that it always reaches you fresh and at its peak flavor, and you will taste the difference.
What, like it's hard? I'll try other voices. Is it hard here? I mean, like...
You can order Sparkplug as you need it, or you can join the Autopilot Coffee Club and get coffee delivered to you on a custom and flexible schedule. And if you use the promo code TOP100PROJECT at checkout, Sparkplug will give you 20% off your next coffee order.
You're not selling me a damn car here, Jerry. Like?
So what are you waiting for? Just bend and snap your way over to sparkplugcoffee.com to get started.
And you take her easy there, L. I like know that you will.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Hello, hello, movie fans, and thank you very much for pounding the play button on Ellis's Analysis episode number 386. We review classics from long ago, and we spoil them from top to tail. But just a heads up that if you're curious to hear our thoughts about the AFI's 1998 and 2007 Top 100 lists, well, we covered all 123 of those entries a long time ago, and we got there first. Well, among the first people, probably.
Yeah, we have competition now.
Yeah, people get a lot more downloads than we do. I'm the sweetheart from Delta New who was better at the bend and snap before the pandemic than I am now. Gut interference. Ryan Ellis. And here's the most likable blonde since the sharp-chinned Elle Woods, my wife Bev.
Aw, well that's me.
You bitch!
You bitch!
The funniest line in the whole film.
One of the greatest lines delivered by an actor who only has one line.
I don't even know his name. I don't have the IMDb in front of me. We have a new audio setup again. We've had some issues lately. You've probably heard it, fans. I don't know why this has such a problem with better microphones the past year. We're recording differently, but we don't have the IMDb open. I'm not going to go searching for this guy's name. But yes, one of the great one-line cameos for anybody ever, and I don't even know who that guy was. Okay, the coming attractions opinion question. How do you prefer your Reese Witherspoon in prestige picks like Walk the Line, where she won the Oscar, and Wild in her badass 90s run with Freeway? You want to get shot a whole bunch of times? Pleasantville and Election, those three. Or in rom-coms like Sweet Home Alabama and Legally Blonde.
Well, Ryan, I take issue with you ignoring the issues that Legally Blonde is tackling. Like the systematic and pervasive inequality suffered by blondes all over America. But...
Well, it's a rom-com is my point, though.
It's not a rom-com.
Well, Pleasantville's also, and so is Election in some ways, aren't they? Well, coms, anyway.
I would argue against... Legally Blonde being a rom-com. Because while there is romance, it's quite the afterthought.
Light entertainment, though, is what
okay, yes, that's fair. So I will surprise nobody and say I think Reese is best when she's being a badass of some kind. She has control over her manic power, and she's not afraid to play a character who's wrong or who makes mistakes and could be legitimately unlikable. She has so much natural likability that I think it overcomes... a lot when it comes to a character. I always think of Tracy Flick as the blueprint, my favorite Reese Witherspoon character of all time, who is a fundamentally unlikable character, but you can't ever really root against her, partially because Reese Witherspoon is just so likable. She's just lovable. But I also appreciate the work she does behind the scenes. I didn't think that she was perfect casting in Wild, which was a book that I loved, and I liked the movie a lot. But she got that movie made. And then Big Little Lies. She helped get that show made. What she does behind the scenes. And Big Little Lies, even in a way, is kind of one of her better characters. It's less serious. And she is playing a likable but very imperfect character.
The trick question is, she's good at all these things.
That's true.
She's good at rom-coms. She's but I'm not a big fan of the ones like Hot Pursuit, even. It's not a rom-com, I know, but it's a more recent comedy. She's funny, but when she does movies like that, it feels like you can do better. Walk the Line is a good movie. I haven't seen it in a long time. And she's strong in that film, but it's really Joaquin Phoenix who's the star of that movie. You mentioned Wild a second ago. Very solid picture. But I'm definitely with you. If you had to choose these groupings, I think people who follow this podcast would know what I'm going to say easily. We've covered two of these movies, Pleasantville Election, and I've already mentioned Freeway, which we haven't covered, but my God, he's so great in that film, and she's such a kid. The character is, and the actress is. She was so young. And you mentioned the TV stuff, including that show, which we haven't seen, but that was also recognized with Emmys and things, wasn't it? The one that's more recent, not Big Little Lies. I forget the name of it. No IMDb to look at right now. She's been a producer on things she hasn't always been in, too. And the funny thing about Election is that that's one reason why she maybe wasn't going to get this role. I'm not sure who it was. It may have been Mark Platt, one of the producers on this, who is one of the guys talking during the Oscar snafu a couple years ago when La La Land was given the Oscar for a few seconds and it was rescinded to go to Moonlight because they actually won. And he's the one that steps up first and says, they got it wrong. The envelopes are wrong. I don't know if it was him, but somebody said that they didn't think Reese was sexy enough to play this role or good looking enough. Yeah, she plays a shrewish character in Election, but look at her at the end when she's a grown-up, when she's in Washington. You don't see the potential for this woman to be beautiful or sexy or what have you. Legally Blonde only works because of Reese Witherspoon. So I guess I'm giving it away that she's one of my favorite actresses of the recent era. I don't usually mention her in the Winslet-Blanchett conversation. So you can mention any of those things. A lot of people love Cruel Intentions, although she's not one of the main characters of that. I always thought she was the Glenn Close role, but she's not. You reminded
me of
that.
She's the Michelle Pfeiffer role. She's still a fairly big part of the movie.
Michelle Pfeiffer. There's somebody who should be mentioned as among the greats.
And what's kind of interesting about the fact that she wasn't, quote, sexy enough to play the role is that I don't think that Elle Woods, while she's very pretty, she's not a very sexualized person. But the director, Robert Luketic, tricked the studio heads in that way. They were expecting wet t-shirt contests. They thought they were buying something a little more similar to, like, Van Wilder or something. They were expecting a sorority movie.
Or Clueless Goes to College, which is what people called this. And Alicia Silverstone
isn't the sexiest movie either.
Alicia Silverstone, we covered that movie a few years ago, is beautiful in that movie, but she's not sexy. She's not supposed to be. She's a kid. She's younger than Reese is in this.
Mm-hmm. And they care about their looks. Beauty is a big part of their identity, but it doesn't feel like a very male-gazy movie. Even though it's a male director, it doesn't feel titillating.
He's not leering at her.
No. Yeah, exactly.
She has so many great little moments. One of my favorites is when she says to Vivian, "You look pretty today," unprompted. And Vivian still hates her at that moment. But it just amplifies why, at least I, maybe everybody likes her. It's things like that. She's nice to the tall dude. Again, I forget his name. I don't have the IMDb in front of me.
Oh.
I have to start taking longer notes, I guess, for this kind of stuff. I relied on another computer for so long.
David Kidney.
Right. She's nice to him early on.
She has very many save the cat moments. She's the type of character that the movie has to work hard to keep us liking. She's rich and she's hot and she's smart. She has everything handed to her on a silver platter and she's oblivious about the fact that anybody might struggle to get the things that she has. On paper, she's a villain. So the movie has to constantly remind us that she is not just a good person, a very open-hearted person. And even though it's a scene that they could have removed completely from the movie and it would have remained totally the same, the scene where David Kidney is hitting on some girls and she comes up and helps him out by slapping him in the face, "How could you give me the best night of lovemaking I've ever had and then leave me like this? You've broken my heart." Make him seem desirable. I love that scene so much.
I love that scene too.
It's so strange how it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie and it is completely inconsequential, except it just shows that she is a person that does good without really thinking about it.
I don't think it's inconsequential at all. We're mentioning it now. The "You Look Nice Today" scenes are very important in this movie.
She's immediately forgiving of Vivian, too, when Vivian starts to come around, even a little bit. She does not apologize to Elle. She doesn't admit that she was wrong. She's still engaged to the man that Elle wants to be with. But as soon as they have the littlest thing in common and Vivian starts to warm up to her,
Elle draws her in.
She's like, "Take Bruiser. He likes you." And kind of refreshing, even now in 2021, but I think in 2001, when this movie came out, snark was everything. This movie is kind of like a warm bath you can slip into and just trust it to respect kindness over everything else. Well, I'm like really sounding like I love the movie and I don't.
Yeah.
Well, I like it fine, but...
Let's get into the details here. Cutie Blonde, as it was called in Japan, was released by MGM 20 years ago on July 13th, 2001. It made a bundle. People went to see this movie in droves in the summer. Bev, please remind people what the movie's about, since it is 20 years old, with the Legally Blonde skinny.
Reese Witherspoon is Elle Woods, a rich, hot, blonde college senior who just got dumped by her rich, hot boyfriend for not being, quote, serious enough. Determined to prove him wrong and get him back, Elle follows him to Harvard Law School, where her aggressive cheer and sorority girl fashion sense makes her the fish out of water for the first time in her life. But Elle pushes through their preconceptions and proves that she's smart and hardworking, and eventually outshines even her professor on a high-profile murder case.
You stole this a little bit, but I'll still do the nutshell. Rich chick gets everything she wants, so yay?
Totally. When Warner breaks up with her, oh, this is the first time you haven't gotten exactly what you want. Although she works for everything that she has.
Mm-hmm. When Warner dumps her, of course, that's the arc of the movie, but move on. You can do so much better. He may be good looking, but that's what's flawed about this movie. The concept. And I don't dislike it. But the concept in the movie is like when Hank said on Kevin Pollak's podcast, I reject the premise of your question. Is apparently one of his go-tos if somebody asks him a question he doesn't like or something. And I've always remembered that line because it fits this movie. I reject the concept. Elle is not dumb. She has a 4.0 in fashion. If you have a 4.0 in anything, you're not stupid. Then when she takes the LSAT, she gets 179. A perfect score is 180.
Yeah.
She is very smart. To do that in a couple of months studying, she fails a few times, but still to achieve that in a matter of months when you never had aspirations for it before, she is maybe not a genius, but she's extremely smart. So why she ever fell for this guy's crap, I don't know. That's the story thrust, I guess. But I reject the premise of the movie to a certain degree.
She's naive. That's what they're trying to sell over and over again. She's somebody who's been, I guess, sheltered to some extent.
Okay.
But she is not naive when it comes down to it. It's cartoonish. I mean, the whole thing is cartoonish.
It's not the best written movie, let's put it that way. Okay, well, the Rotten Tomatoes critics barely gave it a passing grade, but they do. 70% of critics are a fresh tomato, 72% of audiences. The sequel, Legally Blonde 2, I think it was called, then Red, White, and Blonde is the subtitle, was torched on Rotten Tomatoes. They hated that one. And Legally Blonde Part 1 was 22nd at the 2001 U.S. box office. Harry Potter, and so on was number one. Lord of the Rings, and so on was number two. Royal Tenenbaums, we covered that many years ago. One of the best movies of that year was 48th. And Amelie was 71st. We've covered a few movies from 2001 recently, in fact, but those movies I wanted to mention because they're so long ago in our archives. This was a pretty good year for women, though. Amelie is obviously woman-driven. Moulin Rouge, maybe we'll cover that this year. Nicole Kidman, one of her better works. Monsters Ball, the Oscar-winning movie for Halle Berry, which isn't really woman-driven, it's more men-driven, but still, Oscar-winning for her. Ghost World, which we covered earlier this year, two girl leads. Bridget Jones's Diary, Renee Zellweger, one of her best works of all time. I think she's terrific in that. Hedwig, we covered earlier this year. It's a transgender film. Sissy Spacek could have won the Oscar and In the Bedroom that year, one of her best performances ever. And Reese Witherspoon in this. She was nominated for a Golden Globe, and the movie was too, Best Comedy or Musical. Didn't win either of those. And I guess I said this already, but this movie works entirely because of her. The other actors are fine, although Luke Wilson is just, as almost always, milquetoast. He's not a very good actor. I think he's one of those people, like Patrick Wilson, who has a great agent. And of course, Luke also has his brothers.
He has some pretty good friends.
Especially Owen.
Yeah.
Luke has been good, like in Royal Tenenbaums. We said that when we covered that movie years ago, but he's not very good in this movie.
When he's cast well, it works out. When I was reading about the development of the movie, they were talking about all the men that they tried to cast in this part. And then somebody finally said, hey, why don't we just cast Luke Wilson for the Luke Wilson part? They had been referring to it as the Luke Wilson role. He's kind of a nothing character. He's just there to be on her side and to be likable enough for us to root for them to have something going on. But even at the end of the film, when it's supposed to be a big win that they're together and he's about to propose,
she can still do better.
Does Elle really want to settle for this guy?
She's settling.
Yeah.
Warner doesn't care about her. Emmett does, but she should ditch them both and just start fresh in the morning.
The sky's the limit for this girl.
Should be.
Does she even need a man?
No, she doesn't. Okay, well, we saw this movie during the pandemic, and then we saw it again just a few days ago. I guess we've given away that we're not huge fans of it, but we certainly have a lot of warm feelings for it. What are your thoughts on, deep into the podcast here, Legally Blonde?
So, I feel like Legally Blonde is kind of a kid's movie. It's very overwhelmingly wholesome. There's this very clear distinction between good guys and bad guys with very little crossover. Problems are solved with gumption, and the villains always fold on the witness stand. But it's like a very good kids movie with some gender dynamics that were incredibly refreshing back then. Even now, I love to see it. I actually think it's a very good movie, but it's just not a movie I particularly like, and I don't think I'll go back to it very much after this. It reminds me of Home Alone. okay, Home Alone is an objectively good movie that I don't care about.
An actual kids movie.
It's an actual... No, kids movie. Don't you think that Home Alone in spirit shares a lot with Legally Blonde in the sense that reality barely touches these movies? Everything is amped up to this bubblegum cartoon level and oversimplified. The courtroom stuff especially is so divorced from reality that it feels like I'm watching Scooby-Doo.
It's funny, too, because at the end, when Elle is allowed to be the lead prosecutor, or defense attorney, I should say, she's so confident in the whole film about almost everything else, and she's almost always the center of attention. Anytime anything happens that's big and people surround her, they all care about her thing so much.
I was joking early on that the sorority girls are like her cult members.
They are.
They're obsessed with her.
But they are in the beauty salon, too. None of them really know her. Maybe a few of them know her a little bit. Anyway, it's for comedy, fine. But she goes from being misconfident in the whole movie to this whole cowed thing at the very end. And yes, she's not an experienced lawyer yet, but she knows where she wants to go with the whole perm thing. And her client is now her client because Callahan got fired. So step up, man. So for me to say I like this movie is to be generous to it in a way. And I didn't expect to watch it twice in about 8 months. I don't regret watching it. I'm the one that said we should watch this when it's available on Netflix, partly because we should try to be more diverse. I think we have been this year. A lot of women-driven movies this year. Haven't covered Reese Witherspoon in a while. She's certainly worthy of being covered. But it's a movie, like you just said, I'm not going to watch again for a long time because it's barely thumb-upable.
I'm sure I saw it more than once when it first came out, even though it was never a movie that really struck a chord with me. But it is one of those movies where if it's on TV, it's very agreeable. It's incredibly watchable, entertaining. You just can't take your eyes off of her, and she's so lovable that you can just spend 90 minutes with Elle Woods.
I do agree with that.
Kudos to any movie that is this entertaining and watchable.
So the rom-com portion of this movie happens because she gets kicked out of class on her first day by Stromwell, who is Holland Taylor. We saw her in The Truman Show. She's Truman's mother. And she's in To Die For, which we covered last year. This is probably a better role than either one of those, although I do like her in Truman Show. But then she also comes around and helps out Elle. She's in the beauty parlor and overhears what's going on when Elle's at her lowest moment. And she ends up being an integral part of the last third of the movie, last maybe 10, 20 minutes of the movie. But that's where Elle meets Emmett on the bench, who gives her pointers. And we find out Warner's engaged to Vivian. A lot of things happen in that short period of time. That first day of school for her is big in almost every way. And she's only going to law school at Harvard to try to get her man back. And I come back to the same point again, which is you can do so much better. Even if he was a nicer guy, and even if he wasn't a weasel and all these kinds of things, and then ditched her because she wasn't serious enough, which happens. If he had done that a little nicer, and if it had been more of a drama, I can understand that. Maybe that's the man in me saying, I could see myself getting ditched. You know what? I did get ditched by somebody. I didn't know her that well. I'd only been out with her a few times. But I thought things were going fine, and I definitely liked her as a human being. No, you don't go anywhere. You don't do anything. This is a literal quote she said to me. Now, I don't regret it because I ended up with you, but I still remember that line. I don't go anywhere by myself. I don't go to Bermuda by myself. Maybe I will go with you if things go well. So anyway, I've been judged for what I do or don't do, and which is what Warner's doing to Elle in this movie.
It's an interesting illustration to a lot of people peg Elle as being superficial. But everybody proves themselves to be very superficial and to care a lot about the way that they look. Starting, of course, with Warner, who literally dumps her because he's like, I can't have a Marilyn, I need to have a Jackie. It's a perfect casting. Reese Witherspoon versus Selma Blair, the Marilyn versus Jackie dynamic there. And Vivian cares about how she looks. She's a person who's incredibly put together through the whole film. And I would say even the other law students, you know, when they're having the little introduction thing, when they're sitting on the grass, they're very proud of their accomplishments. They're very concerned about how they're presenting themselves as a person who belongs at Harvard. They all care about aesthetics in one way or another. If they didn't care about aesthetics, then it wouldn't bother them that Elle was going to school with them, that this blonde in pink was appearing in all their classes. They all look the same. And I'm sure that's not actually true in any given law school, even to the point where I don't think there's a single black student in this school.
That's not that surprising at Harvard in the early 2000s.
And in movies in the early 2000s.
Also in movies, yeah.
Oh, don't. There is one black student, the one that Holland Taylor hits rather hard on the head with a pencil.
Uh-huh.
Saying, would you bet his life on it?
Right. Well, I've seen your notes there. It says, is it feminist? Well, let me open the door.
Well, you can see the first line is short answer, yes. Absolutely.
I can't read in this lighting down here. The computer lights up the room so much more that's not on right now, so I can't read that. I'm half blind. Go ahead, Bev.
You're cheating.
Is this or is this not a feminist?
I feel like on the surface, people might say that it's not. The writer of the novel, she went to law school. Her name was Amanda Brown. She said that there was a student that she went to school with who wanted to change the name Semester to Ovester. I thought that was like an over-the-top joke. But it probably really happened, and it probably is proof that there's always been annoying college students who take things too far.
What does semester mean, then?
She's saying, oh, because it comes from semen, but like, I don't think it does.
I did not picture that. I honestly did not know why there was a problem.
It's not a problem. It's an invented problem, is my point.
Amanda Brown wrote this book, by the way, and it came out the same year the movie came out. One of those very fast turnarounds we've seen sometimes. Not even a year later or 2 years later, the same year.
She couldn't get publishers to pay attention to it. They weren't interested. But then she said once she got Hollywood into it that they were all over. And that started a bidding war. Obviously, it was a story that was obviously going to make a good movie. Mm. So I'm not even sure if the book got published. I should have looked this up. Is there a book? Is Legally Blonde? It is? Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah, it got optioned to be a movie before she even...
And it was written by women, by the way. A team of writers, Karen McCullough and Kirsten Smith, who write together quite a bit. 10 Things I Hate About You, they wrote that. And Ella Enchanted. I didn't love those two movies, but I didn't hate them either. Much like Legally Blonde. If it was on TV, I'd watch it again. I didn't dislike those things. In fact, the technical people, which we'll cover later, their credits are way more meh than Karen and Kirsten's credits are. But they adapted Brown's book.
Okay, so back to Is It Feminist? It seems like it's a tricky answer because Elle's intentions are not remotely feminist. And she kind of backs into becoming a feminist hero who proves everyone wrong. She's not so much out to prove them wrong. It's more like she overcomes sexism by sheer obliviousness of sexism. Which, to be honest, I'm okay with. It actually comes across as a refreshing take. If I had a daughter, I would show her this movie. Because it doesn't get into the weeds of it. It just presents kind of a more idealized version of the world, while including the problems that most women are going to encounter.
One of the reasons why I think that actually is true, too, is that when she goes to the quote-unquote costume party, because Vivian's lied to her about what she's going to in her bunny outfit, where, of course, she looks a little silly. Even for a costume party, it's a little bit much to wear something like that. But she won't let herself get humiliated. And that's when she finds out she should move on from Warner. The light bulb moment happens at that party. But even then, she isn't actually humiliated. It would have been by a woman anyway. It wasn't by a man. But she's got the ownership of herself to just own that moment. And she ends up buying a computer, still wearing that outfit, when she runs into Emmett at the store and still doesn't act like, oh my God, I look like this.
So we talked about this a little bit when we covered Beauty and the Beast, which is another feminist but spuriously feminist movie. Belle shows up at the beginning of that film, fully actualized, and everybody else has the arc around her. And it's the same with Elle, Belle and Elle. Elle starts this film fully actualized. She has some distance to go, but she is the same person at the end of the film that she is at the beginning of the film, and she bends everybody around her far more. They all bend to meet her where she's at because she's just so irresistible, and she's right. So that's the confidence that she brings in when she shows up to this party, the only one in costume and like the pink bunny outfit, which is kind of like her spirit animal. I mean, let's face it. It's the most Elle outfit in the movie, wouldn't you say? Even with the fur tufts at the top. And it's also very cute, and it's very pretty, and even though it's lingerie, it's not the world's sexiest outfit. She's just Elle. And her feminine taste, it's typically something that's looked down upon. But that's just, of course, the patriarchy that undervalues things like fashion, beauty, soap operas, the type of things that she likes, traditionally undervalued just because they are considered, quote, women things. Elle doesn't try to change or hide her tastes. She proves that she can be herself and still rise to the top. And her femininity proves to be her strength and the key to winning the case in the end. She earns her clients' trust through sisterhood, which is a huge theme of the movie, that she's always very loyal to her friends, her girls, her sorority sisters, but also, well, I guess it's her sister, Brooke, the defendant.
Who she listens to as well.
Yes, she has these real relationships with people.
She's paying attention.
And these are typically feminine attributes. That she listens, that she pays attention, she shows up bearing gifts, she's very warm and giving. These are all feminine attributes that turn out to help her in the end. So I think there's a pervasive attitude that in order to be a feminist, you have to take on male attributes to succeed in a male world. And here's a movie that's like, or everybody else should just change to meet you. And that feels actually like a far more progressive and refreshing feminist message to me. It's not a perfect movie, and of course anybody who wanted to, in bad faith, take down this movie could nitpick a detail here and there. She's in a bikini. It's clearly sexualizing her. You could totally nitpick
it
this movie.
It is a Hollywood movie.
It is still a Hollywood movie.
They sexualize everybody if they can.
Yeah, if you wanted to dig deep into the classism, although even the classism, her best friend in the movie is a very working class character. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about her yet, but Jennifer Coolidge plays Paulette, who's the manicurist that she becomes very good friends with. And it's a legit close friendship. They mm-hmm. care about one another. Elle is so herself with Paulette in a way that she can't be with all of her fellow rich grad students.
She's not a phony, though, when she's with them.
She's not a phony. When she's with Paulette, you feel like she lets her guard down. And when Paulette needs help, she helps her. There's no looking down on Paulette. She doesn't look down on anybody. She doesn't look down on the very working class people that hang out in that beauty salon. She treats herself like she's just one of them.
I would love to know this person. I think she'd be somebody I'd love to follow, too. It's that whole thing I've said before. I wouldn't follow Orlando Bloom into the bathroom when you watch him in Kingdom of Heaven. But I'd follow Tom Hanks and Saving Private Ryan into the heart of war in a second. Well, Elle Woods, in a different way, I'd follow her in anything. The way that she's portrayed, especially when it comes to the law, she learns it so fast and she's so good at it. Yeah, it's a cartoonish way that they do it, but I can see why Brooke would have faith in her and not so much in Callahan. One of the biggest disappointments in this movie when we saw it last summer, because I haven't seen it since probably 2002-ish or something like that, I'd forgotten that Victor Garber's character, Callahan, ends up being a lech. I didn't think he was going to be, but then when he does make a move on her and puts his hand on her leg, I thought maybe this movie wasn't going that way because it was so deep into the movie. It was maybe 20 minutes left when that happens or something like that. Vivian sees that. Another turn where, oh my God, I like Elle. No, I don't like Elle anymore. She's just trying to screw to get ahead.
It's kind of an idiot plot, a little bit.
Exactly. But I wish they didn't have Callahan go that way. But then I guess there's no other way to get him out of the way to make Elle the lawyer if you don't do that. But I was hoping this wouldn't be that kind of movie all over again. Because we've seen that so many times where the guy who brings in the girl who doesn't seem like they belong, it is because of their looks in the end and their sexuality and what he wants from her.
Or has Elle really earned that spot?
And he should have seen that in the months, or I guess months, but weeks at least, that they were all working together. She seemed to be, whenever we see scenes of them prepping the case, the star of that room. So even if you first saw her and thought, oh, I want to get in bed with her, it should have been more a matter of, yeah, but she's now become better than that. I don't want to objectify her. And by the way, when you were making your little rant there about Elle's qualities and feminism and all that stuff, you know what I'm picturing? No one listening to this other than our close friends, if they do listen, are going to know this name, but our friend Val. When I first saw her, she then was model-like, I think.
She's one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in person.
And she looked like the kind of person that would just slough me off.
She's an intimidatingly beautiful
person.
But
she's also one of the nicest people I have truly ever met. She is the Elle Woods of our friends group.
She makes every room brighter and happier.
And she truly accepts people. It's not a matter of her just listening to me talk for a few minutes and can I move on to somebody else I like better.
No, it's not charity.
So she's the Elle of our friends group.
So when Elle gets hit on by Garber's character, she runs to Paulette, and this is the moment where she's about to give it all up. This is the darkest moment in the film, which I think is appropriate in the sense that it's not just to get Garber out of the way, it's also to fill that plot hole, have a moment where she doubts everything and she wants to leave it all. It actually illustrates a great point of one of the most harmful things about sexual harassment in the workplace, which is that she says to Paulette, oh, I thought that he picked me for this job because I was so smart. He actually just picked me because I'm pretty. But she is that smart. She had proved herself already several times over that she had made headway with a client that other people couldn't get through to, and that he was calling on her for answers while he was sending other people to get him coffee and pastries and stuff.
Vivian especially.
Vivian especially was getting the very feminine role of refilling his coffee or whatever. She was good enough for that job, but he didn't care. Whether she's good enough or not, she's still a dime a dozen. He's a teacher at Harvard. There's lots of really talented, smart people there for him to choose from. So he doesn't care how she's going to interpret his come on. He just wants what he wants. It doesn't matter how smart you are. That can derail you just by completely crushing your confidence, believing that you're an imposter who didn't earn anything that you have. And then sisterhood power comes through when Holland Taylor, the professor, happens to be in the beauty salon and overhears everything and turns around very dramatically and says in her great voice, she has such a great voice, you're not going to let that ruin your life, are you? And then, of course, she immediately turns around. Small part, but she made such a huge impression. I think that when most people think of Holland Taylor, this is most certainly one of the first things they think of.
One of the important things, too, about Elle and why you like her is that she finds out Brooke's alibi but won't reveal it, even to the legal team. which in some ways I can understand, in some ways I can't. She wants to give confidence to what she now thinks of as a friend, although she barely knows Brooke. But when it comes to making Brooke's case work better, because she gets off with the alibi of getting liposuction, but then she's a fitness guru, so that's a problem. But anyway, she could get her off with that. But she tries to keep a confidence. Man, she's cool that she would actually stand up for somebody that she barely knows. But it's Brooke who's going to pay if that doesn't work. It's Brooke's decision, and Brooke may end up in jail because of it. And we find out in the end that, of course, it's Linda Cardellini, who is the killer. So she was coming off of Freaks and Geeks around this point. That failed so badly. It shouldn't have. What a great show that was. And then a couple years later, it has Brokeback Mountain, and now she's Mrs. Hawkeye in the MCU. And it's done a lot of other things, too. I think she was on ER for a while after I stopped watching. But she's the bad guy. That's another thing I'd forgotten. I haven't seen the movie in whatever many months. I forgot she's supposed to be the bad guy. It's not the pool boy. You bitch. It's Linda Cardellini's character. So it's one of those legal movies like Liar Liar where the case is important and it becomes a huge part of the last act, but it is more of a comedy, so it's not like it's The Verdict here, Paul Newman movie. It's inconsequential to a degree, even though it is, of course, a murder trial. We just said we're not really, well, at least I'm not a huge fan of Luke Wilson in anything except for Tenenbaums. I saw Idiocracy again a few days ago, which is a movie that I think would have been funnier 5 years ago. And it's true, more true now than it even was at the time. But again, even in that, he's lukewarm. Very appropriate, lukewarm. Selma Blair, I think, should have been bigger than she ever was. She was in Cruel Intentions. She did with Reese Witherspoon. Matthew Davis only did Pearl Harbor that year in Blue Crush. That really stand out, does TV mostly now. We talked about Garber and Taylor and Coolidge, of course, Best in Show. So funny in that. We covered that years ago. She was in American Pie. So in three straight years, American Pie, just at the end, though. But she is
the original MILF.
The original MILF, and she is worthy of that buildup of being this woman that we all want to MILF.
It's crazy. It's crazy that she can look really hot.
And not in this, though.
And really bad.
Yeah. Because in Best in Show, she's also still pretty hot. The year between. So 99 for the American Pie, 2000 Best in Show, 2001 for Legally Blonde. And mostly does comedies. Ali Larder, Final Destination, and a lot of the Resident Evil sequels. And she is Brooke, of course.
And she was in Heroes. The greatest disparity between first season and second season of any television series in history, maybe. Okay. Yeah. She was one of the heroes. She had superpowers.
And then Raquel Welch is a small role. She, of course, is in Shawshank Redemption, if you think about it. She's the iconic poster in 1 million years BC in that fur bikini. And then the dog Bruiser, whose real name was Mooney. And he, I think it's a he, was in the sequel and lived 18 years. So he had a nice long
Good
life
for
and got
him.
To be a movie star. The best part of the movie was the dog. Every actress, if you look on IMDb, seemed to be in consideration for this role, including Alicia Silverstone, so it would have been a follow-up to Clueless unofficially. But they got lucky. I guess I've said that already in casting her. Reese has 40 different hairstyles in this movie, which doesn't seem possible that as busy as she is would find the time or want to do that. And she also got to keep all the clothes from this shoot, which was part of her contract.
Oh my God.
Good on her for doing that one, because I guess she probably wears, or at least at the time, wore these clothes for years, and she has some great outfits.
There's some bad outfits, too. It's very 2001.
Well, easy to say that now. It's 20 years later.
Totally.
But as far as the screenplay goes, Karen McCullough, Kirsten Smith adapting Amanda Brown's book. Then you got the men producers. So Mark Platt, I mentioned him already, who did work on the sequel. And Rick Kidney, who ended up going to action picks like Salt, which does have a woman lead, this Angelina Jolie.
It's funny because there's a character named David Kidney. It's such an unusual last name.
Right. Maybe that's the end. Well, it's from the book. Anyway. And then we may have said his name wrong, but Robert Luketic or Luketic or Luketic, whatever we're saying his name is. This was his first ever movie. And 21, I know Kevin Spacey's in it, but that was fine. Chris and I could do that one day because it's a Cards movie for scoring at the movies. But the rest of his comedies, look at IMDb, just suck.
Oh, damn.
So you got the men director, the men producers, but the women writers, three of them, including the novelist, and a lot of lady stars. So this is definitely a woman movie.
By 2001 standards, this is an absolute estrogen bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not the hugest fan of the script, right?
It's okay.
Because I feel like it's a really elegantly told story.
It is
like,
quick.
It keeps things simple. It really knows its main character in a way that I think very few movies do. And of course, as we say, she really is the lodestone of this whole film. Without her, her character, this actress, it falls apart very quickly. But I think it's a well-told story. It always seems very tight. Every scene seems to lead into the next one. And it's highly entertaining and a well-written script. Just because it's kind of dumb, intentionally dumb. It knows it's dumb. Like Home Alone. It knows exactly what it is. Its tone is very consistent, actually.
I just reject the premise that this person who is already smart enough to get a 4.0 in anything, and then to get an almost perfect score on the LSAT not that long after, despite a few tries at it, would not see past her dick boyfriend, who clearly wasn't the most loving guy to begin with, but she's so over the moon about him proposing, which he doesn't do, and then chases him across the country, so it's like Felicity.
You could make a different movie where she's a total psycho.
Or stalker.
Following him, yeah, exactly.
Felicity, I watched that first, maybe even second year, and I liked her so much, but I remember thinking even then, you're such a beautiful young girl. You're obviously smart enough to get into the school that whatever his name was got into. And Scott Speedman, you can do better than that. Come on. So it's the same kind of thing here. Is I almost reject the whole premise. They didn't make her, I guess, if you're going to do what you do in this movie, dumb enough.
Mm.
This woman is the kind of person that everybody should flock to. I like her so much. Maybe because it's played by a really great actress who's so physically appealing as well.
It's silly that they get Chutney to confess on the stand after 10 questions. And it's silly that this perfectly smart person would be dumb enough to follow this total dud of a man across the country. Everything about the movie has that same level of silliness. So you just have to go with it and accept it. It's fair. If you reject the premise, you reject the premise.
Except Reese drags this thing from being, for me, a flat-out thumbs down, because it's not because of her. We talked about the sequel already in 03, the 2007 musical, which got a bunch of Tony nominations. I can see this being a musical.
Oh, totally.
And the 2009 straight-to-video Legally Blondes, where Elle's cousins are the main characters. And they're talking about making Legally Blonde 3, which I guess Reese would come back to do all over again as
a
40-whatever-year-old woman. It's a thing, too. You watch Big Little Lies, which is a couple years old now, but that's a beautiful cast, really talented, good story as well. Probably should have been one season only, but Reese in that is just eye-poppingly pretty, and she's not young anymore at that point, 40-ish, maybe older than that. And being a producer now, as she has been for quite a while, much like the character of Elle, I'd follow her into battle, if you will. She's no Orlando Bloom. She's a Tom Hanks. The movie's 2, 3, 9 to 1. We watched it on Netflix. The cinematographer Anthony Richmond did dramas like Don't Look Now, or really more of a horror film, back in the 70s, and then also comedies like The Sandlot, which Chris and I covered, so he's really all over the place with his movies he shoots. The movie looks pretty good. It's very bright and fun, a lot of pink. I'm not a fan of that color, but on Reese Witherspoon and in this movie, it looks good.
Yeah, the whole movie is very bubblegum aesthetic.
The editors Anita Brandt Burgoyne and Garth Craven, both, much like their director, don't have very good credits on their resume overall. Craven did work on Turner and Hooch, though, which is a movie that I have a bit of affection for. I haven't seen in a long time. Tom Hanks again comes up. And the composer, Rolf Kent, worked on Election, also worked with Payne, Alexander Payne, quite a bit, and Jason Reitman quite a lot. So of those three people, or four, including two editors, he's got the career I like the most. What would you think of the look? I guess you said that, the cutting and the music.
Oh, the technicals are great in the sense that they don't really get in the movie's way, and they play into the theme and the plot, and the tone is all really consistent.
They're letting the comedy be a comedy.
Shout out to the wardrobe. I think the outfits are like a character in themselves, and not just Elle's outfits, the way they dress Vivian, the way they dress Paulette. You could write a dissertation about what this says about fashion in 2001. Clearly an important part of the film, and I think they really nailed it.
What happens next? Well, we know there are sequels and everything like that, so we have to ignore that for a second. I would say that Elle encounters the Witherspoon multiverse and indicts a crime-committing Tracy Flick from Election because that character was going to commit some crimes. And then she's tasked with defending her very bad girls in Freeway and Big Little Lies. Especially in Freeway, where she's going to get shot or shoot somebody else a whole bunch of times. And Big Little Lies, well, she's done some bad things in that show. Anyway, multiverse time for Reese. Because my point in this whole podcast has been she's a very diverse person. She hasn't done a flat-out horror movie that I can think of off the top of my head, but she's done some dramas like that movie Rendition, which didn't do very well, but that's a very serious drama. And then something like Legally Blonde with the actual legal system being a huge part of the story, of course. I guess I don't need to rave about her anymore, but it is funny that anyone would ever call her a shrew and not see past the fact that, okay, she's supposed to be an annoying, trying-too-hard young girl. But then when you see her at the end, that brief moment, really funny moment with Roderick as well, who the F does she think she... But in that few seconds when you see her by the limousine, you don't see that one moment and think, yeah, that woman can be a turn-on.
And she had shown range. Pleasantville, Cruel Intentions, Freeway. This girl had absolutely done a range. Those are four dramatically different characters, all four of them. So give me a break. You don't think that she can be A, hot, come on. Yeah. B, that she could play a different kind of character than Tracy Flick.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. So, last thoughts on our last movie of March, because we're taking next week off. Your closing statement on Legally Blonde.
Well, it may not be my jam, but I have a ton of respect for this movie. And truly, if I had a daughter, I would absolutely show this to her.
We didn't really talk much other than the great "you bitch" line by that one guy. If we laughed that much, I did enough. Not as much as I would have liked, but I don't really laugh that much at most comedies unless it's a truly hilarious movie. It seems to be either laugh a lot through something, TV show, movie, whatever it is, or don't really laugh that much. I remember when Eddie Murphy said when he auditioned for SNL, the response from these people that had seen everything was this sniff and this little head back. And yet they hired him. So obviously they thought he was funny, but they didn't even react with laughing at one of the funniest people who's ever lived. So I'm not quite like those people, but maybe I lean more towards them than I want to. So I didn't laugh that much at this movie, but it's definitely likable, and we got the great lead. And it does have some good laughs, including one of the best ones in any movie, really, with "you bitch."
You bitch.
Okay, our podcast turns 8 on Thursday the 25th, so later this week.
Oh my God, that's 8 crazy.
Years old, yeah. If you want to do something nice for our podcast anniversary, get us something in bronze or pottery. Wait a minute. Bev's got that covered. She does pottery.
I am a potter.
So next week, we're going to take that week off I mentioned already, and it'll be the first time since mid-October. We haven't had a week off in so long. So happy Easter for those who do care about such things. We do not. We're just taking a week off because...
I just want an excuse for a week off.
I like to not be sitting in this room every minute of my day, it seems. April will be Oscar month for us, April rather than February this year. And we'll cover 3 titles in April that found Oscar glory in the past, and we'll also do our annual Oscars preview show. We'll try to see as many movies as we can, but this is one year we won't have seen all or almost all the nominees. Well, maybe we'll get close. We don't know. We've seen a lot of the ones that got nominated for Globes, so it'll probably be close to all of them. But the Oscars preview show will be on the 19th. When we return on April 5th, we'll cover a Best Picture winner from 55 years ago, A Man for All Seasons. What a follow-up after a week off to Legally Blonde. I haven't seen this movie in probably 20 or even 25 years.
As a middle-aged white lady, I have an appropriate obsession with the Tudors, so I am looking forward to this movie.
You know, that's a good point. A lot of people are loving things like The Crown as well, and this may not be the same thing as that, but it leans more that way than Legally Blonde does, or most movies we cover.
I just finished Hilary Mantel's trilogy about Thomas Cromwell, and I am ready to talk about The Court of King Henry VIII.
Okay, so the coming attractions trivia question in 2 weeks for A Man for All Seasons. Fred Zinnemann was nominated for the Best Director Oscar 7 times, and he won it twice. How many times in those 7 films did he cast the same lead actor? So it's one of those kinds of questions of, did he go the Scorsese route and have De Niro over and over again? I guess I'm giving away that he didn't. Or did he have a lot of different people?
He did have De Niro specifically? No.
Never once that I can remember. Anyway, how many times in those 7 films did he cast the same person in those Best Director nomination movies?
All right, so for the answer to that question, in 2 weeks from now, you can check out our next podcast about A Man for All Seasons. And in the meantime, you can check out our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to favorite or subscribe to the Top 100 Project wherever you listen to us. And all of our episodes are available for free, and that includes all 123 movies that made the AFI's 1998 and or 2007 lists of the best American films ever made, and hundreds more titles on top of that. In exchange for all this great content, all we want, all we ask, maybe it's our birthday present, leave us a rating and a review. We love that. It helps people find us.
8 years of awesomeness. Well, probably more like 3 or 4 years of awesomeness and 3 or 4 years of finding our feet.
It's all awesome.
And finding if you'd our like footing, to, I should say.
If you'd like to reach either of us, we're both on Twitter. I'm at Bev Ellis Ellis. Ryan is at MovieFiend51. Or you can reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And to enjoy freshly roasted premium coffee delivered straight to you in Canada or the US, please go to sparkplugcoffee.com and use the promo code TOP100PROJECT, and that's all one word, TOP100PROJECT. It's not case sensitive, and that will get you a 20% discount.
I just realized we spent this entire episode rooting for a blanking lawyer. Well, let's retweet.
Hey, we have a good friend who's a lawyer, so she says this is one of her all-time favorite movies.
Oh.
I was texting her before recording this.
Blanking in this case meant awesome.
Our awesome lawyer friend.
Sorry, Nads.
And cut.